Today's show is brought to you by LinkedIn Made Simple. There's no doubt LinkedIn is an essential platform for businesses and business professionals to capture leads, jobs, and referrals. But let's face it, LinkedIn is still very confusing to many. I mean, what do you do on LinkedIn anyway? The good news is it doesn't have to be this way. You can go from clueless to conquering the platform quicker than you think with LinkedIn Made Simple. LinkedIn Made Simple is a step-by-step video-based online course that guides you through the exact steps you need to effectively use LinkedIn so your brand can flourish. So whether you're a job seeker looking for a new role, an executive looking to boost your profile, or a business looking to up your game on LinkedIn, LinkedIn Made Simple will help you achieve your LinkedIn goals. Check out LinkedInMadeSimple.com and enroll today. Hello and welcome to the Brand New You Show, the podcast dedicated to helping you clearly and confidently build and market your brand so you flourish. I'm your host, Ryan Roten, and today's guest is Gina Riley. Gina is a career branding coach who helps leaders communicate their career stories. She is an interview skills trainer, an executive search consultant for the Talents Group, a certified UMAP coach, and a Disrupt HR speaker. Gina, it is my pleasure to welcome you to the Brand New You Show.
So happy to be here, Ryan.
I'm happy to have you here too. And I know you listen, so you also know what the very first question is going to be. So if you could vacation in only one place for the rest of your vacation days, where would you go?
I am going to choose the continent of Australia because of the diversity of what I get to go see. Because I love to see a lot of things. I like to eat. I like to hike. I like to wine taste. I like to explore. So I don't want to be locked down to just the beaches of Maui for the rest of my vacation days. That is not going to work.
You are the first person to ever say a continent. So there you go.
I'm going to admit to you that I did Google whether or not it was a continent or a country, and it's considered both. But if I select the continent, I get to go to New Zealand.
Ah, okay. Look at you go. You're on it. See, now I'm only going to get seven answers for the rest of the time I do this podcast. People are going to always pick continents.
Oh, no, no. I'm paving the way and everyone else will be copycatting.
Yes, that is true. And I'm just going to call that out as soon as they say it too. All right. So when you're not vacationing on the continent of Australia, you are doing other things related to career branding, job searching, interviewing, helping prepare executives for searches. And so if you could, just tell me a little bit about your career progression. Like, how did you get into the career space and what you're doing now with the Talents Group?
Sure. That's pretty easy because I like helping other people set up their career stories. So of course, I think about my own. And truly, the nugget was about age 16 or 17 when I got involved with personal development programs. And I got chances to facilitate and lead large and small groups of people. And I carried that into my college experience where I was also developing workshops and leading people, finding myself in leadership roles, but I didn't know what to study. So I studied communication, which was the specialty of organizational communication, interpersonal communication. And I thought I would go into training and development, which was kind of a new term back then. I'm kind of old. So anyway, I found my way into human resources because that seemed like the gateway into training and development. I knew I liked to create training and I liked to deliver it. So I really was starting off in staffing roles and in hotels. I worked at Intel for about 10 years. I eventually got my master's degree so I could be an HR business consultant internally to one of our large business groups there. And then I worked my way into training and development, developing training programs and delivering them. And that's really my passion is kind of this hybrid of all of that.
So tell me, like, what is it about the executive coaching or the executive part that excites you when you get a chance to coach somebody?
What I really, really love to do is I really like to focus on people's individual stories and tease that out and really understand what their career results are so that we can put together a whole cohesive soup to nuts story that they can tell in a succinct way so people can hear it so that it lands. That is, I think, the most important part of what I do.
So tell me, like, okay, so you say career story. So let's just talk about that for a second. When people think career story, when you start to work with somebody, what are some of the common objections that you hear from them because they think maybe their career story is something other than maybe what you're thinking it should be?
actually, that is the most exciting part of my job. When people first call me, a lot of times they start with the resume. I need a resume writer. And really, job search is not about the resume. You need a resume so someone can know where you've been in your career progression. But really, it starts with understanding your strengths and your values and knowing how that connects to whatever job you're doing and the organizations that you serve. And then threading that into a cohesive way of explaining what results you bring. And so with executives in particular, they inherently know what they can do well. But what happens in interview situations is a lot of times they will end up rambling because they haven't prepared those career stories. They have not prepared specifically what results that they get in a way that that new company can understand how they will fit into their organization going forward.
So just to kind of ground ourselves, when we say executives, what level is someone typically when we consider them to be an executive?
So a lot of times I'm working with people who are anywhere from running an entire company, a CEO or a COO, but I'm working with managers, director level. And really my approach is universal. My approach is starting with someone's career chronology. We tease out from the time that a person's gone to school, why did you choose the degree that you got? Talk to me about the things that excited you when you were in school, and then tell me about each of your career transitions and what value were you bringing all along the way. That's the same for anybody who is creating their story so that they can set themselves up to interview. And that is the key to preparing all of this information. But if you don't start with who you are, which that goes back to the strengths and the values and what motivates you and who are you, how are you going to articulate that in an interview? And it's really dangerous to wing it, especially if you're experienced, because if you ramble, then you will look like you haven't prepared.
Yeah. So just at a high level, what's the difference between an executive search and say a regular search? Or is there a difference between the two?
There is. There's actually a couple of different lanes for search or recruiting. So what we do is we're a consultancy. So our client companies hire us to come in and we do a mini SWOT analysis. So we look at the strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats to the organization so that we understand where this new leader is going to fit into the current state. So we reflect back in our consulting what we hear they need. And we do these interviews 360. So we're interviewing people on the board of directors, people on the staff, people that will report to them, and possibly even customers if that's necessary, to find out what all the stakeholders really need and value in this new person coming into the job. So the difference between what we do is we are truly partnering with that organization as an extension of them to go out and find those people and assess them through multiple layers of interviews before we even present them as viable options moving forward. And then we help them manage their whole interview process. And we even offer up our 6-hour training program if they want to get their hiring teams really ready to ask questions that will assess each of the candidate's skills, both behavioral and functional. So other kinds of recruiting firms will sometimes work on a contingent basis. We are a retained search firm, meaning we have the exclusive contract working with them to find those candidates and work with them until the offer is made. A contingent search firm will be any number of firms that might be working on a job at any particular given time, and you never know if your candidate's going to be the one that ends up getting that job. And so you get paid contingent upon whether or not you find that candidate. So we don't operate in that model.
Now, you mentioned a couple of times as you're going through here, getting the candidate ready. You mentioned skills, strengths, values, and knowing who you are. And obviously, there's a lot of different ways and methodologies that you can use to do that. But I happen to know that you have recently become certified as a UMAP person. So tell me a little bit about the UMAP certification process and then just the methodology behind it.
Yes, I'm a newly certified UMAP coach. And the reason why I chose to get the certification is because it is a holistic tool that takes four different aspects of a person and puts them into one unique way of expressing who you are and what you bring to the table. So it's assessing strengths, values, motivated skills, and career interest type or your personality. And with the strengths, what you do is you complete an assessment and we get your top five Clifton StrengthsFinder strengths. So we know that. You do a values assessment, so we know what really matters to you and what your deal breakers are. If you're working with people or an organization that may not be a values match, does it matter in that situation or not? We talk about that. We also talk about a person's motivated skills. We know that if you're using the skills that you love to use 80% of the time, you're going to be successful and happy and thrive in your job. So we want to take a look at that as far as making the right choice going forward. And I reflect all of that information back with my coaching clients when I'm doing career coaching, when they're trying to make a choice. And I'm like, well, that doesn't really match the values that you say that you have, or that doesn't match the skills you're going to get to use. And then the fourth component is sort of your personality, how you show up or your career interest type. And that is just another reflection of who you are and how you express yourself, not only on the job, but in life.
Full disclosure, I am going through this process with you right now. And I can say that the motivated skills section, and in particular, the burnout skills, I have been paying attention to that over the last few weeks as I engage in any kind of activities for my job or even in life. And it is amazing to me, like as soon as I start to drag down in a task, I kind of have started to stop and go, oh, that's because that's a burnout skill. I should probably either not do that or find somebody to do it for me.
That's right. We talked about what can you outsource or what could an assistant do? What are those pieces so that you can really thrive and do what makes you super happy? We all have to do things that we don't want to do. Like in my household, I'm not great with budgeting and balancing my checkbook, but you know, as an adult, I have to do it. But gosh, if my husband can take the burden of some of that stuff off of me, then I can thrive in the other things that I do well.
Yeah, amen. One of the things that popped up for me as a burnout skill is the detailed budget work, that type of stuff. And I sat down last weekend to do my taxes and I thought I was going to cry in front of my entire family.
Yep.
It's as you said, right? It's not that you can't do those things. It's just that those things just suck the life out of you. And you just rather be doing anything else besides those things.
It's true. And what's really great about the UMAP assessment is it gives me, boom, a snapshot of the coaching client that I'm working with. And I can immediately see the tea leaves of who they are and how they present. And that's where we start. So when I'm coaching someone that's coming to me, we work on, okay, what are those key top five strengths? And you're 1 in 33 million. With your top five strengths in the order that they present. And so there's this incredible thing that you can talk about in an interview situation about what you're bringing to the party that's different than anybody else. Nobody is like you in that situation.
I'll say this, it's interesting. Here's what I liked about it. First of all, the way you coach people through it, it's very easy to understand and very laid back. It doesn't feel like you're being coached, okay? But what I like about the UMAP process is how it pulls together the different things that you could go take all individually on your own. But if you did that, you'd probably never understand how they all work together. And that's what I like about it. But to me, that's different than any other assessment that I've seen out there.
And that's exactly why I made the investment in myself and in getting the certification is I had already built something like that for my coaching program, but I had pieced it together. And this is just such a beautiful, holistic tool is the way that we describe it. And I appreciate that it didn't feel like you're being coached because it's a conversation. I'm talking to people through it and having them tell me stories about how those strengths are showing up in their lives or in their work situations. And then I reflect back how that all is coming across. So it gives them language to talk to in interviews. I just think it's the coolest tool ever. And I like talking about my strengths because it's everything that's right with you.
One of the things that I think people underestimate when it comes to their career. And as you know, if this gets crossed, like it can completely ruin your career and you end up diving into burnout skills and all these other things. But values, as I looked back at my career, there were times where I would be doing tasks and my head would hurt, which I always relate to skills. But at the same time, if you're in situations where your heart hurts,
yeah,
then that's where you know there's a values issue. Would you Absolutely. Agree with something like that?
I absolutely do agree. And I do, again, going back to the holistic picture, it also can relate to your strengths. So if I'm going to use an example for me, my number one driving strength is activator, meaning I need to see action. I want to incite action. I'm going to be active. I want to get my group of people going. And if I chose to be in a work environment where I didn't get to activate, it was, let's say, slow, too methodical, things weren't happening quickly, I am not going to thrive in that environment. And that's a strengths-based situation.
Yeah, you'd be super frustrated.
Oh,
that would be no fun to be in all day long.
I would die. I would be like a cooped up little bird.
So the UMAP really helps you pull together and identify who you are and where and how you add value. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned it helps you prepare for interviews.
Yes.
So would you agree that interviewing is a skill?
Yes, it is a skill. And it is a skill that we should be teaching starting high school moving forward. I volunteer in our high schools and we do mock interviews, and some of the kids are fairly well prepared to do it. Most are not. And then you get all the way up to the senior level. I've had an executive tell me, just get me in front of the right person and I can get the job. That's exactly the person that rambles and does not land with their career results and explaining how what they do fits with what the problems they're trying to solve by hiring the job in the first place. They just talk, talk, talk.
I think it's an important point to make is that you might think that you're not good at interviews, but the truth is it's a skill. Therefore, you can learn it.
Yes.
You just need the right coach.
Yes. Yes. And even if it isn't a coach, it might be just people that you can lean on in your circle. But you can get this whether you pay for a coach or whether you're, you know, going to other sources. But you have to prepare your story first. You need to know who you are, because especially with executive search, our company, Talents Group, is really interested in hiring humble leaders. We want to be making a match between the candidate and the company, and we're going to assess the human and leadership skills. So we're going to ask for stories around humility without saying, are you humble? But we have questions that we ask around all of this stuff. Are you smart? Are you able to read people? Can you change your behavior based on the situation that's going on? And are you hungry? Do you want the job? Do you show excitement? So all of those things about your strengths and your values, you need to infuse that in the way you tell your stories. And then if you don't know your stories well, you don't know how you got from point A to point B and the results that you got, you're going to have a really tough time in interviews. Someone else is going to, if they've been practicing, they're going to land better.
So tell me how you can use career stories a little bit more specifically in behavioral interview type settings.
First of all, you just need to have your career chronology all kind of written out and ready to go. And then what you do is you take that job description that's been posted and any information that you've uncovered about the company, what challenges they're facing, what their financials are, anything in the news, anything you can get from any of your internal connections, start piecing together what that story looks like, because the questions that they are asking, if a well-prepared company is serious about their interview process, they're going to craft questions around the job that they've posted and they've thought about the functional and behavioral skills. And so then that leader who's interviewing should be able to tell stories from their past tied to what that company is doing in the future, because they need to bring the stories to life about how they're going to show up when they arrive at the company. What's their 90-day plan? How do they enter an organization? How do they learn about their team? How do they grow and develop leaders? We ask all of these kinds of questions.
I don't know. I could be wrong. It sounds to me like you're saying that people should be doing research as you're preparing for your interview.
Oh, yes. You caught that? Yeah.
Yeah. If you had a magic wand and you could wave it to anybody who's getting ready to do an interview, what is one thing you wish they knew about that interview as they were getting ready to go into it?
Don't ramble.
Okay. And the only way you don't ramble is through
preparing your career story. And here's the thing. What happens when people ramble, Ryan? The person listening, their brain shuts off. And what's so terrible is, you know, being an experienced interviewer, I know when my brain starts to shut off and I bring myself back and I try to give the candidate every opportunity to shine because that's their moment and it's a make or break it situation. And we work our best to probe and to redirect and ask the questions in a way that we're getting what we need. We'll interrupt people and say, hey, we need to learn about this skill. Thank you for that story, but we're going over here now. It does not serve you well to ramble. And the only way to really circumvent that is to prepare at least high level those career stories that involve the results that you know how to get.
As you were talking, I was like, I liken it to brand messaging because people, especially business owners, have a tendency to ramble on about themselves and the things that they do without giving much thought to what the potential customer or reader of your website is there to learn. So being able to talk in their language and put yourself in their shoes is hugely important. So after we do our jobs for so long, what we do just becomes like an ingrained part of who we are. And we don't recognize our career stories as skills or things that might be valuable to a different company. How do you help people realize that what you do is very valuable in other places?
Yes. Oh gosh. You touched on so many things that I love that question. So first we need to start with the person, the strengths, skills, values, who they are. And then when we know what their results are, we now can form an entire picture of what they bring to the party. And when I'm listening for all of these unique things that are coming out, I'm asking questions and drawing all the correlations. That's how we develop that picture of how they're going to talk about themselves. And yes, you're right. People will think, wow, this was easy. You know, this is just what I do. It's not special. But if you have someone that can reflect it back to you and explain why it's special and important and why it's different and unique, that is how you start talking about your transferable skills because we are not our job titles. We teach a 6-hour interview training. The first thing that we ask everyone to do for our icebreaker is to, you know, say your name. And we don't ask for their job title. We want to hear their purpose. When they show up at their best every day, what happens in that organization? It's a whole different reframe. And it really, people sit back and go, oh, that, okay, that's different. And then they think about what value do they bring?
Yeah, that's very interesting. How do you coach people to handle questions that are around their burnout skills? That's kind of like, what's your greatest weakness? How do you coach people through those, answering those types of questions?
It is. So because I primarily work with leaders, what we talk about is if you've got some of these areas you are calling weaknesses, I call them development opportunities. So where, first of all, could you potentially develop some skills that you don't have? Because sometimes the burnout skills are related to just not knowing how to do something well. And sometimes it's just stuff that we hate to do. Okay. So if you don't like to do something, what you probably want to start talking about is how you develop a team around you to make up for those deficiencies, if you will. So how do you build a team that is full of all these different capabilities rather than building a homogenous team with everybody with the same skill set because you're using the same darn job description that you've been using for 15 years?
I'm going to play off that. Is there a right way to write a job description then?
Yes.
So if I'm a HR person and I'm listening to this right now and I'm getting ready to write some job descriptions, what are some tips that you can give me to help me write it so that it makes more sense and is better than just recycling something that came out of a drawer from the last time I hired from that position?
Exactly. And this is going to go back to the way that Talents Group does our SWOT analysis when we enter a client company. So our suggestion is that you would do a 360. You're going to ask upwards, downwards, and sideways, whoever this role is being impacted by, what do we need to be looking out for? What are the skills that you would like to see as an internal customer? Or for the people that are going to be direct reports, what kind of leader are you hoping to have? You start to develop the behavioral skills piece of it, but also those functional and technical skills. And this is your opportunity to fill a gap that you may have that would not be a copy exactly of the last person that left. Maybe that last person that left did an amazing job and they've left a terrific legacy, and now you need a new kind of leader with a different set of skills. We see that there's a life cycle for every organization. There may be the startup life cycle. There might be the growth and, you know, developing life cycle, and then there might be the wheels on the bus sort of leader. So what kind of leader or what kind of person do you actually need to fill this role? And if it's just, if it's a individual contributor, you can still do the same kind of assessment to figure out what are the full skills that you need to bring into the team.
I look at job descriptions quite frequently, but I look at them for a different reason, from a messaging standpoint. And one of the things that it drives me crazy about a lot of job descriptions I see is the company spends an inordinate amount of time talking about themselves and very little time talking about what you're actually going to do in the job. How important do you think it is to write a job description so that it's facing the person who you want to hire as opposed to talking about your company?
What we do is we do a very short paragraph just kicking off who that client company is in an encapsulated form to give the big picture. And then we go right into what are those critical competencies that we're looking for so that the person reviewing it can see themselves in the job or not. Yeah, I think if you spend all your time talking about yourself, it's the same issue with regular, you know, branding in any case. So it's really promoting the exciting opportunity of the job with what you're going to get to do.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think if people who don't prepare tend to talk about themselves too much and don't tell the stories that help the interviewers kind of start to visualize them in that role.
Yeah, that's true. And the way that we write our job descriptions, it's a little bit of a prescription for what people should be preparing for in the first place. If you go through, it's very easy to take many of our bullet points and just transform them into a behavioral interviewing question. So any job description, even if it's poorly written, that is your first breadcrumb trail for how you should be preparing.
As people prepare for interviews and they start to do their research, is there any specific techniques they should use or things they should be doing to help them get ready for that?
Well, I'll answer this almost the opposite way. The wrong way to do it is to only go to the company pages and lift off the exact language and branding that they're saying about themselves and then somehow put that into what you're talking about. So don't do that because everyone can tell you've done it, because that's just the easy way out. You want to Google Six Ways from Sunday, anything that's out on the internet about the company. You want to look at who their key customers are. Have they lost accounts? Are they gaining accounts? What challenges does it seem like they may be having? And then start to try to visualize why this role is open in the first place. And that's how you start building the questions around the things that you're curious about to see if you're a fit for the role. And remember, this is all about being curious. You talked about curiosity earlier. As the interviewee, you need to be curious about why the role is even open. And you need to draw a correlation between what you know how to do and what it is that they say that they need. And if you don't ask the right questions, you can't bridge that gap. You're just talking at them and selling them on yourself.
So I want to talk about the Talents Group for a few minutes here. I know, like, you kind of divide yourself into three main buckets: executive search, consulting, and career coaching. So And we've talked a lot about executive search, and we touched a little bit on consulting. But if I'm in an HR position and I want to bring you in for some consulting, what are the types of things that we would be discussing?
Right. So the third piece of our business is really doing that interview skills training, where we've developed a program that is a hybrid of between 4 and 6 different interviewing programs that we have taken from many days of delivery to 6 hours. So because we so believe in crafting effective questions, it's one of the favorite things that I do on the team is to be able to go in and train a group of people. I've trained people who hire welders for a living, all the way to, you know, people who are building software programs to, I just got back from Napa Valley and was at a winery, and we've trained over 50 of their management team to craft effective questions. The other thing that we do for consulting is we have done an employer branding project where we went in and did a different kind of a SWOT analysis. We did about 18 focus groups and synthesized a bunch of data and talked to all of the executive team and reflected back their top values and the things in the culture that really meant something to them, so that they could take those key things that popped out of it and then go develop their employer brand messaging, which is in alignment with us partnering with talent acquisition professionals. You know, an HR VP or the head of talent acquisition at any given company, it's in our wheelhouse to be able to help with those messages.
And then the final piece is the career coaching piece, which you are leading, correct?
That's right. That's right. So I developed a career coaching program. It's kind of a soup to nuts approach. When I have people approach me and first say, I think I need someone to write my resume, that's kind of a red flag. I'm usually not the right kind of coach for them, because that's not coaching. That's writing someone's resume. And I don't believe in having someone handing off your resume to someone to write it for you, because the hard process of going through and writing your own resume is how you interview. And if you show up in an interview and someone else has written your resume and you don't really own it, you don't really know it, you haven't told the stories, you're going to bomb in the interview.
Yeah, it makes sense, because if I don't know the stories that created the bullet points and I just said, well, here's what I think I did, then when I'm asked about it, I'm probably just going to regurgitate a bullet point without any context.
Yes.
Around how that bullet point was achieved, which is probably not a good recipe for success.
You just said the most important word I feel like we've had, other than maybe the word curiosity earlier, context. You need to share context so your interviewers understand where you fit into the grand scheme. And without context and understanding your story, it's storytelling. And it's something that you have to do for your entire career. You need to be keeping tabs on your career results, making note of them, keeping your kudos files and all of your reviews, all your key accomplishments, and keeping up with your networking, of course, in order to have that fluidity in your career so you can make those transitions when you're ready.
I was given some advice early on to keep all my performance reviews. And I thought, why? That just seems weird. But I did it. And then as I got further along in my career, I started to realize that's pretty important stuff to know and understand what you've achieved. Because like I said before, when you're in the moment, you really don't look at what you do as, hey, I'm adding value. But when you can look back and see the performance reviews and all that stuff, not only can you see you're adding value, but you can see what you actually accomplished.
Right. It's on the back of your earlier career accomplishments. Do you stand up and continue to grow and do even better things? And what I really teach the leaders that I work with is how to express those career results on their resume, because it's all about the quantifiable results and not a lot of blah, 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 extra filler words on resumes. As a recruiter, I need to skim a resume and quickly get the idea what those results were so that we can make a quick determination if that person's going to be in the pool or if they're going to be on the back burner.
Right. So I should be thinking about things like dollar signs or numbers, you know, increases, decreases, that type of stuff, as opposed to, well, I was responsible for this department.
Correct. Correct. Yeah. We want to see percentage signs, dollar signs, et cetera.
I think it's easier too, if you can state those things, to have follow-up questions that are in your favor. If you if you follow me there, meaning I've stated a statement and what we were able to do. And I would think generally the next follow-up question that you've now set yourself up for is, how did you do that?
Oh, absolutely. You need to show your methodology and how you're showing up to get your work done.
Okay, cool. So people need to pay attention to this stuff because interviewing is a skill that can be learned. You need to know your career stories. You need to know who you are and your values and your skills and how those things help you contribute to the value of the company every day you're at work.
Exactly. Right. And the more complicated your career story, the more twists and turns that you have along the way, it's even more important for you to get your story straight. And at first, I think some people come to me and they're not completely convinced that they need to start with the strengths and the values. But once we do it and we start, I'm able to reflect back who I see that they are, then they start to see where that leadership piece locks into the interviewing process and how they need to communicate how they're going to show up.
Awesome. I love it. I know having gone through some of this stuff with you, you helped me see things in myself that I didn't see before, but I know it has seriously made a difference in just the way I see how I'm doing things throughout the course of the day. I was having a discussion with a client and I was listening for what they were telling me that it would be like to work with them. And when I started to hear certain things that I can now identify as a burnout skill, which I could not do before working with you, I started to realize really quickly in some cases that these are not people I should probably work with.
Yeah, it does help you make better choices if you are completely aware of all those components about yourself. And thank you for the compliment, Ryan. That means so much to me because you know that I'm your biggest fan. I've listened to, I think, all of your podcasts. And you've interviewed incredible people, and it's really helped fuel my knowledge bank as well. And what I will say is, for me, in my top three strengths is individualization. It's my favorite strength, actually. It's my number three. And what it means is I can really see what's different about each person that I talk with to knit together their story that's unique, so that they're able to communicate it. And I think that hopefully that's what came through when I was working with you.
Loud and clear, actually. All right, Gina, all good things must come to an end. So for those people who want to learn more about you, about Talents Group, what is the best ways for them to get in touch with you?
Well, right now is to go to talentsgroup.com. We're an executive search and consulting company, and you can check out our team. You can also connect with us on LinkedIn. You can connect with me. And I always say, do a personalized connection request. Say, hey, Gina, I heard the podcast with Ryan Roten and wanted to connect.
There you go. I like that. Everybody should do that. When they're connecting to you, not like everybody.
Not everybody. Yeah. Well, it's really, really nice because I get connection requests from all around the world, and I don't really know if it's because they heard or saw something that they liked, or if they're connecting because they think I'm going to find them a job. Or a lot of times, right, when you're a recruiter, you have people coming your way that think that that's what you do. And I don't get paid to find people jobs. I get paid to coach people, or I get paid by a client company to help them launch a search. But I don't get paid by individuals to help them find a job.
Yeah, good point right at the end here, which is make sure you're doing personal connections on LinkedIn, because otherwise people have no clue why you want to connect with them or what the purpose would be. So, right, I've found myself paying attention to invites now and what people say in it and where they're coming from before, right, I accept it.
Absolutely. And sometimes I'll get vague ones from people that are selling me like some sales funnel stuff. They'll say, oh, I saw you and we have mutual connections, let's connect. But I don't know if the next message then is going to be a pitch. Or if they really saw something that they liked. I can't read that one very well.
Yeah, totally. I get that. And so, honestly, just because of what I do for a living, I will sometimes accept stuff just to see what that pitch is. But anyway, we've totally digressed. Gina, thank you so much for your time today. I enjoy talking to you anytime I get a chance. And, keep up the good work and the things that you're doing at Talents Group. And if anybody is looking to get some career coaching, which we all need, I highly recommend they look you up.
Thank you. You're a good friend, Ryan. Thanks a lot.
Today's show is edited and produced by Ryan Roper. The Today's music is Hudson Hawk by Neon Beach. All licenses for today's show were purchased via soundstripe.com.